This KABU program is made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from the African American Alliance for Home Ownership, presenting the 6th Annual African American Home Buying Fair, including over 40 home buying professionals and education workshops, Saturday, October 22nd, 10 a.m. at the Emmanuel Hospital Atrium, 501 North Graham in Portland. Information at 503-595-3517 or aaah.org.
KABU Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Conference on Human Rights and Labor Rights, featuring speakers Scott Nova, Executive Director of Workers' Rights Consortium from Washington, D.C., and Leona Foxfog of Sweat Free Communities from Massachusetts. This event is presented by the PSU Progressive Student Union and the Coalition of Campus and Community Groups, and it takes place on Monday, October 17th at 7 p.m. at the PSU Multicultural Center. For more information, please email lc@pdx.edu or call 503-471-7798.
Part of your life?
Well, if it is, listen to the KABU Food Show on the third Monday of every month at 10 a.m. for coverage of
cooking, nutrition, food production, and most anything about food from KABU's unique alternative perspective.
Everything about food, nutrition,
Everything
about food, nutrition,
recipes, food production,
and most anything about food.
The Food Show. Every third Monday.
10 a.m. for
11 a.m.
Yummy. On the third Monday of every month at 10 a.m.
But you know we spend $25 million on a movie. Not even worth being shown on TV. We spend $2 million on an airplane.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. This is More Talk Radio with Cecil and Celeste.
Good morning.
Today is Monday, October 17th.
Mm-hmm.
2005.
Yes, it is.
And we welcome you, and we thank you for joining us on this beautiful
morning. Autumn day. Yeah, it's an autumn day.
It's an autumn day.
Yeah. Blue skies and the requisite rainy mist. Can't ask for too much more.
So it's such a wonderful day with all this liquid sunshine or something like that.
I like that liquid sunshine. Okay.
Let's get started by sharing some announcements.
Well, I've only got one. Today, Monday, October 17th, is the day you would be putting your taxes in if you've asked for two extensions. However, there's an opportunity to learn more about what you can do if you don't want to pay your taxes. A war resistance tax workshop, 7 p.m. will be held at the Laughing Horse Bookstore, and that's at 3652 Southeast Division Street. You have an opportunity to talk with experienced war tax resistors. Bring your questions and your concerns. There is no charge. Sponsored by the War Resisters League here in Portland. For more information, you can call 503-238-0605. I'll give that again, 503-238-0605.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing that caught me about that announcement was two extensions. So this is from like last April.
Right.
3 month extension.
Right.
And another.
You can get another two. Those don't come as easily though. You have to have a very good reason for those.
Okay. Well, this is good to know for next year.
I don't know if you want the stress of having that second reason though, you know.
Well, let's continue with some other announcement. At Portland State University, today from 4 to 9 p.m. is a human rights and labor rights conference in Smith Center. There will be various workshops on resistance and globalizations, on schools' affiliations with workers' rights consortiums, and cities passing anti-sweatshop laws. And then at 5:30, there are also some workshops on city anti-sweatshop laws strategy session, and followed by from 7 to 9 p.m. With four keynote talks by organizers from workers' rights consortiums in the District of Columbia, Sweat Free Communities in Florence, Massachusetts, and two organizers from San Francisco Global Exchange. Again, this human rights and labor rights conference takes place today from 4 to 9 p.m. at Smith Center. For more detail, contact lc@pdx.edu or 503-471-7798. One other announcement is that Phyllis Bennis, who is a favorite of those of us here at Cable.
Been on our show a few times.
She will be given a public lecture entitled Dual Occupations, Iraq and Palestine in Bush's Empire. It will take place this Thursday, October 20th at 7 p.m. at St. Francis of Assisi Catholic Church, which is located at Southeast 12 and Pine in Portland, Oregon. Phyllis Bennis is a senior analyst at the Institute for Policy Studies and a fellow of the Transnational Institute of Amsterdam. Her lecture is free and open to the public and is sponsored by several peace and social justice organizations. So again, a free public lecture by Phyllis Bennis this Thursday, October 20th at 7 p.m. at St. Francis Church, which is located Southeast 12th and Pine. For more information, contact Kelly Campbell at the American Friends Service Committee, and she can be reached at 503-230-9427. So those are just some things that are happening today and this week. And so we hope that if you have announcements or concerns for the community, that you please let us know so that we can share the announcements and news with other people in the community.
With the listening audience. And to get them here at Cable, you can address them in care of the community calendar at 20 Southeast 8th, Portland, Oregon, 972 1714. I couldn't remember the zip code for a moment. Okay. 97214. And please get the man a minimum of 2 weeks in advance. It gives our volunteers the opportunity to get them read and edited into the community calendar announcement. And also, due to the volume that we receive, not all items make it into the community calendar. So if there is a programmer that has a show that is closely aligned with the themes of your events, you might also send it in care of that programmer to the same address.
Coming up this morning is two interviews which we hope will be informative and also in which you may participate in by telephone. Our first interview will take place at 8 p.m. No, not 8 p.m.
I like that.
Will take place in a few minutes. We'll speak with some activists from Colombia who will talk about the situation in Colombia and specifically the U.S. Intervention in Colombia, and particularly about the struggle of indigenous and Afro-Colombians. That will take place shortly. So stay tuned, and we think this will be an exciting interview to hear about that struggle here in our hemisphere. Later on this morning, we'll speak with Paul Gom of the Bus Project, and he will talk about an exciting project they have about an upcoming forum on electoral reform here in Oregon.
That sounds exciting. That sounds really exciting. So in the meantime,
we invite you, if you have concerns or announcements, perhaps you might want to talk about or comment on the election in Iraq yesterday or some other topical issues or announcements. We invite you to give us a call here, and we'll put you on the air.
Yeah, we got about 12 minutes or so.
And our phone number is
503-231-8187.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, gosh, I'm having Monday fade already.
It's been so long.
Yeah.
It's been a couple of weeks now. Since we've been off the
air.
So give us a call. Let us know what's happening in the community and share announcements and things that are exciting.
And important.
Yeah. But, you know, one thing that I thought was I saw over the weekend, and perhaps you might be aware of this, the mayor was doing a walking tour of certain neighborhoods, and I guess he does this periodically.
Yes.
And he was in North Portland this weekend.
Okay.
And he got to see some of the best and the worst of Portland.
Well, yeah. St. John's is actually experiencing, it's a slow but steady growth spurt, I guess you could say. People are becoming a little bit more politically aware of the potential of North Portland. Also, there's been a few controversial, I guess I call them events. One of the things has been a desire by a lot of the residents there to have parts of St. John declared an alcohol impact area, mm-hmm. just because there are a lot of factors involved, and we won't really get into it on the show other than to say there are people there who feel that alcohol may have an undue impact in the area and exacerbate some problems that are there, whereas others feel that that's a detrimental label for the area to have. And so there's been some rather spirited debate over it. But there's a lot of growth that's occurring in the area, and it's welcome, and it's deserved.
Mm-hmm. So it's not only in that neighborhood, and of course all things are related, and our first guest, we'll make the connection between some of the things that are happening here locally and some of the things that are happening internationally. But one other thing that recently the city council and the mayor has come up with yet another plan to combat homelessness and or drug issues in our fair cities. I lose count after a while.
Well, you know, I only think two are important. No, I shouldn't say it that way. That's not what I mean. What I mean is I'm working on one, and there are another two that that are partnering with that, and that's to get a day center in northeast Portland. And so, as a matter of fact, we're having a meeting today, some of the service providers, we're all getting together today to work on that, because we just feel with the loss of a lot of community support organizations and agencies, such as the Life Center. A few years ago, they lost the YWCA, the Yale Center, Youth Opportunity Center is closed, and a few other really strong support agencies have closed down, that we need something there to help out. And so a bunch of us are working toward building a day center that would be a place for getting clean clothes, taking a shower, telephone calls, working on your resume, some job counseling, maybe some other counseling referrals, but basically a place where if a person is homeless, they can go in and basically get themselves squared away so they can go and apply for jobs. Mm-hmm. And it's really important if you talk to a lot of homeless people on the street, and I mean literally have a conversation with them, they'll tell you, well, you know, sometimes the issue is I could get off the street if I could get a job. I could get a job if I felt like I could get myself cleaned up. Mm-hmm. You know, so you think about what are the basic things. You know, sometimes some of the larger needs are important, but sometimes those basic things like being able to make yourself feel comfortable, clean, and presentable to go for a job job interview is the most important thing. So, you know, you do what you can. So there's a couple of groups that are already dealing with homeless issues that we're also bringing to the table. So we're looking at doing some synergistic work with them to keep from reinventing the wheel, you know, yeah, and to expand some of the other services that are currently available in parts of Southeast and downtown into Northeast.
Well, that certainly sounds, as an important project, and again emphasizing the need for communities to come together and begin to address some of these issues. I think one thing that may be hopeful in recent days is that many of these efforts want to make sure that all interested parties are at the table.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's not just say business owners or social service providers or elected officials or people who work in government.
No, we have people who are actually affected at Ground Zero who are involved, people who are homeless. There's one of the agencies we're working with has a breakfast every Monday. Mm-hmm. And so we're actually working with the people who come to be served at that breakfast to get an idea of what kind of services they need and shape it based on what they're telling us. So we're capturing a lot of data on it.
Excellent.
Yeah, no, do it right. That's the whole thing, is do it right from, you know, you don't build it and hope they'll come. You ask them what they want, and then you build it. That's how you do it. Makes a big difference. Makes it real.
And just to remind you, you are listening to KBOO Portland. This is More Talk Radio with Celeste and Cecil. It is approximately 7:53 in the a.m. It is Monday, October 17th. And joining us shortly will be some activists from Colombia, and also later on we'll have a interview with a representative from a local organization that many of you are familiar with, which is the Bus Project.
All right.
So we're going to take a short break as we prepare mm-hmm. for our first segment, and we hope you'll stay tuned for our first interview.
Yes, we're going to a musical interlude and then come right back to More Talk Radio.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 on your FM dial. It is 8 a.m. This is Small Talk Radio with Cecil and Celeste.
Indeed.
And joining us now are our guests, the American Friends Service Committee, which many of you know is an independent Quaker organization, which is active in human rights and peace struggles, both domestically and internationally, continues its activism of promoting peace and justice. They are sponsoring a tour of activists from Colombia who are here in the United States to give us some more information about the conflict in Colombia, the U.S. Military role in Colombia, and the struggle for justice and peace in this region.
And you'll also hear our interpreters in the background to help our guests, as their primary language is Spanish, and so we want to make sure we communicate clearly.
Joining us this morning are Clemencia Calabali, who is the American Friends Service Committee field staff person of the Cauca region in Colombia. She's Afro-Colombian from the Department of Cauca of the Pacific Coast, and since childhood she has been participating in community activity. Among the organization, she is a founding member of the Municipal Women's Association and works in partnership with the Process for Black Communities. Joining her is Victor Hugo Vidal, of African descent, who was born and continues to reside in the municipality of Buenaventura on the Pacific coast of Valle de Cauca. He has been active in community work since he was 16 years old, a long-time activist. He is a leader in the community and the process of black communities. He speaks on Colombia today and the U.S. roles and the struggle of the community for peaceful resistance and the preservation of culture.
Good morning and buenos dias. And welcome to Portland and to KBOO Radio here on More Talk Radio. One of the things that I wanted to comment on first and foremost is that you both started at a very young age in community work, community organizing. Does that speak more to a passion you had as a youngster or a great need for organizing in your communities?
Bueno, yo diría que son las dos cosas.
I would say it's the two things.
Además de la pasión que llevamos dentro en nuestra sangre, porque como...
More than just the passion that we have within our blood.
Comunidad negra, durante muchos años nos ha tocado luchar por nuestros derechos.
The black community has had to struggle for many years for their rights.
Además de esa pasión, es también la necesidad.
Besides the passion is the necessity.
De organizarnos y de unirnos.
To organize us and ourselves and unite.
Para que esa defensa pacífica por los derechos como pueblo afrodescendiente.
And for a resistance, a peaceful resistance of the black community.
Sea más efectiva.
Would be more effective.
¿Y Víctor?
La situación es igual.
The situation is equal. The same.
Pues nuestras condiciones históricas de vida nos obligan a unirnos y a trabajar.
Our historic conditions make us become more united and continue to struggle.
Por eso desde muy joven nos hemos organizado en función de defender nuestros derechos.
And since a very young age, we have organized ourselves to for our rights.
You mentioned beginning organizing as a very young people, and also the needs to preservation of culture. Could you say something more about the struggle of your people in terms of preservation of your culture, and what are some of the issues that you continue to face today?
Pues nosotros asumimos la cultura.
We take on the culture
como la base de nuestra reivindicación como pueblo.
The base of our vindication as people.
Por eso partimos de que hay que rescatar lo que hemos sido.
We have to save what we have had.
Teniendo como centro nuestro ancestro africano.
We have as our center our African ancestors.
Can you say something more particularly about what part of the country Afro-Colombian reside, and in terms of its historical, in terms of its history?
Bueno, las comunidades, los afrodescendientes de los negros descendientes de africanos,
the black descendants of Africans,
que son los que la mayoría que poblamos el país,
we are in all parts of the country.
Vivimos en lugares muy apartados de las grandes ciudades.
We're separated from the large cities.
Durante muchos años, y son lugares que ofrecen mucha diversidad y mucha riqueza natural y mineral.
They're in areas that are very diverse and have a lot of natural resources.
En los últimos años, mucha gente nuestra ha tenido que desplazarse hacia las grandes ciudades como Cali, Bogotá, Medellín.
In the recent years, many of our people have had to displace themselves to the large cities like Bogotá, Cali, Medellín.
Ante la situación de conflicto que se vive en Colombia.
Because of the armed conflict in Colombia.
Porque hay un gran interés por parte de las multinacionales.
There's much interest because for the by the multinational corporations.
Y del capitalismo en general.
And capitalism in general.
Por los recursos que se encuentran en las zonas que tradicionalmente nosotros como pueblo negro hemos habitado.
For the areas where we traditionally as Afro-Colombians have resided.
Y esa es una de las causas del conflicto en Colombia.
This is one of the causes of the conflict in Colombia.
Is there any particular reason why much of the conflict is centered on the areas where the black Colombians live? Is it a matter of living where most of the resources are, or is there another political element?
Las condiciones son tanto políticas como económicas.
The conditions are both political and economic.
Posterior al proceso de esclavitud,
after slavery,
la comunidad negra en Colombia quedó ubicada fundamentalmente en las costas.
After slavery, the black community was mostly located in the coasts.
En lo que hoy es el Valle y el Cauca.
Today it's called el Valle and Cauca. These are states in
okay.
Colombia.
Que en la actualidad son los lugares más estratégicos desde el punto de vista de la economía mundial que tiene Colombia.
These are areas, the most strategic areas that that Colombia has in relation to global economics. Mm.
Por eso nosotros creemos que la presencia del conflicto interno o la guerra interna colombiana.
For this reason, we think the presence of the armed conflict in Colombia.
No es una casualidad en nuestros territorios.
It's not an accident that it's there in our territories.
Por el contrario, es una estrategia de apropiación de las riquezas que estos territorios tienen.
What they really want is to take advantage and take away these very rich territories.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, More Talk Radio. We're speaking this morning with Clemencia Calabali and Victor Hugo Vidal, who are touring here with the American Friends Service Committee from Colombia here in the United States on a tour of education to talk about the U.S. role and also on militarization and the struggle for preservation of culture here in their native land. You're here in the United States as part of a tour in terms of getting Americans aware of what's happening. What do you think are some things that Americans most need to know about the situation that we are most ignorant about?
Okay.
Nosotros creemos que es importante que la comunidad norteamericana sepa.
We think that it's important that the North American community knows
que muchas de las luchas que hacen pueblos que tienen dificultades acá,
the struggle that communities here that have many difficulties,
también las hacemos nosotros allá en Colombia.
We also have the same struggles in Colombia.
Y en ese sentido, lo que queremos es la solidaridad.
What we really have come for is the solidarity.
Porque no somos enemigos de la sociedad norteamericana.
We are not enemies of this North American society.
Pero sí estamos en desacuerdo con las políticas que imparte el gobierno de los Estados Unidos hacia Colombia.
Yeah, we are against the politics and the policies of the North American government toward Colombia.
Por ejemplo, el Plan Colombia.
For example, Plan Colombia.
Que es una estrategia pensada desde el gobierno de los Estados Unidos.
It's a strategy that was thought of here in the United States.
Donde le da mucha plata al gobierno de Colombia, pero que la mayoría de ese dinero es para invertirlos en armas.
It gives a lot of money to the Colombian government, but most of this money is for arms.
Para fortalecimiento de la guerra.
To strengthen the war effort.
La fumigación de los cultivos de uso lícito, lo que come la gente en Colombia.
The problem using the fumigations destroy the legal crops in Colombia that people use as food.
Con el pretexto de fumigar las drogas.
And it's used, the fumigation is used as a pretext to fumigate the drugs. Which the or the coca plant.
Pero la realidad es que la coca en Colombia cada vez crece más y más y más.
In reality, there's more and more coca in Colombia.
Y a consecuencia de que el consumo no se disminuye.
The problem is the consumption doesn't diminish.
Y para nuestras comunidades eso tiene impactos muy grandes.
And for our communities, this has great impact.
Y negativos como el desplazamiento,
negative impacts like displacement,
el reclutamiento de nuestros jóvenes,
the recruitment of our young people
into the military,
lo recluta el ejército, los paramilitares,
recruitment is not just the army but it's also the paramilitaries.
Y okay. También las guerrillas.
And also the guerrilla forces.
Okay. Entonces está la comunidad en un medio muy difícil.
And the community is in the middle and it's a very difficult situation.
Y lo que le pedimos a la comunidad norteamericana.
And what we are asking for the U.S. Public.
Es que se informe más hacia Colombia.
That they themselves inform themselves about the situation in Colombia.
Y que podamos hacer presión al gobierno de los Estados Unidos.
So we can make pressure the United States government.
Para que cambie su política hacia Colombia.
To change its policy toward Colombia.
Y al gobierno colombiano.
And the Colombian government.
Para que cambie su política hacia los más pobres, que somos los afrocolombianos y los indígenas.
That the Colombian government changes policies toward the most poor, who are Afro-Colombians and indigenous.
También como comunidad estamos adelantando iniciativas de resistencia pacífica.
As communities, we have strategies of peaceful resistance, initiatives of peaceful resistance.
Para la cual pedimos su respaldo y su apoyo.
And of these initiatives, we ask for your help and support.
Porque creemos que la guerra no es la salida que Colombia necesita.
We think that the war is not what Colombia needs.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 here in the city, 91.9 in the Columbia River Gorge and the Willamette Valley. It's 100.7 on the web. It is KBOO.FM. We're speaking with Clemencia Caravalli and Victor Hugo Vidal. Both are here with the tour to broaden our understanding here in the United States of situations faced by Afro-Colombians as part of the Colombia Plan or the Plan Colombia. Just for a little history on that really briefly, in 1999, representatives of the U.S. State Department and officials from the Colombian government revised the plan Colombia, which originated in 1998. And in revising it, they strengthened the heavy emphasis on counter-narcotics initiatives and also increased military component, which is pretty much the bulk of the package now. Now, even though this plan was developed with social and economic components to it, and these components were intended to be financed by the European Union, the European Union expressed a lot of reluctance to participate in this plan, and so they've not been as supportive because they're not happy. The EU, that is not really pleased with the heavy reliance on military solutions, and so it's been really hard to get resources donated by a lot of the European nations. Also, one of the important factors with the Colombia plan is that the Colombian government was not very much involved. They were pretty much shunned and not allowed to participate in the drafting of this plan. The plan wasn't debated in Colombian Congress. Even the governor and the local authorities of Putumayo, where the plan was supposed to be implemented, were excluded from discussions about the plan's strategy or any of the possible consequences. Now, there is money now that does go to Colombia, and as you've heard, some of it is used for war on drugs to eradicate the cocoa plant and to strengthen the military. But there's been a lot of criticism because it's not been very effective. So consequently, we've got people who are feeling not only disenfranchised politically for not having any say on a plan that has money coming into their country, but now there's a lot of movement to basically move the people who have been residing in this area from this area, displace them, and further disenfranchise them.
Is that a somewhat accurate summary of what's happening?
Sí, efectivamente, ha hecho usted un muy buen resumen.
Yes, you made you summarized it very well.
Conoce bastante sobre la situación de Colombia.
You know a lot about the situation in Colombia.
Y es importante que esta información se pueda desplegar para que mucha gente lo sepa.
It's very important that a broader audience knows these facts.
Y entre todos hagamos acciones pacíficas para que cambie la manera de intervención de los Estados Unidos hacia Colombia.
That we do non-violent resistance in order to change the situation in Colombia.
Bueno, entre algunos países como Colombia, porque sabemos que también interviene Irak.
We also know that, you know, we're talking about Colombia. We also know the United States has intervened in Iraq.
Tiene grandes intereses en Ecuador.
Tiene interests in Ecuador.
Peru y Venezuela.
Peru and Venezuela and more in there.
South American countries.
Yeah. Uh-huh. You mentioned, Clemencia, about the struggle and the peaceful non-resistance. Tell us about some of the activities that your community is involved in terms of resisting peacefully some of these initiatives.
Bien, una de las iniciativas es capacitarnos nosotros mismos para generar más conciencia.
One of the things is to train ourselves to be more conscious of our own situation.
Lo otro es fomentar la plantación de cultivos lícitos.
And we want to also promote the planting of legal crops.
Que garanticen la defensa de nuestro territorio.
That guarantees the defense of our territories.
La supervivencia nuestra como pueblo negro allí en esos territorios.
That we are able to survive in these territories, we as Afro-Colombians.
Y el fortalecimiento del proceso organizativo.
And we want to strengthen the organizing process.
Tanto a nivel interno,
as internally,
a nivel regional,
regionally,
haciendo alianzas con otros procesos organizativos que luchan por la paz.
If we make alliances with other organizations that are struggling for peace.
Como los compañeros indígenas.
Like our compañeros native Colombians.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Alianzas a nivel nacional.
Alliances at the national level.
Con campesinos, sindicalistas.
With peasants, unions.
Organizaciones de maestros.
Organizations of teachers.
Y a nivel internacional con organizaciones que también luchan por la defensa de los derechos.
And with international organizations that also struggle to protect human rights.
Now, you mentioned legal crops, for example. Can you tell us a little bit about that and if anything in this Colombia plan is supporting that? Because it would seem that if the plan, no matter how vague this plan is to support your economy and to remove drugs, that it would really work hard to support your agricultural initiatives. Is there any support coming out of U.S. monies to support legal crops?
Bueno,
digamos que, como se mencionaba anteriormente,
as you mentioned before,
el Plan Colombia sí tiene un componente social.
The Plan Colombia has a social component.
Uh-huh. Que no supera el 20% del total del costo del plan.
But it's only about 20% of the cost of the plan.
Mm. Pero este 20% se maneja con criterios del gobierno colombiano.
But these, they're according to criteria. This 20% of the money is based in criteria of the Colombian government.
Y realmente no va a las comunidades afectadas por todo el conflicto.
And it doesn't go to the communities that are affected by the armed conflict.
Además, la manera como se viene erradicando los cultivos de coca.
And the way that they're trying to get rid of the coca plant.
Mata cualquier posibilidad de generar cultivos lícitos.
It destroys the possibility of growing legal crops.
So it destroys the land. It makes the land unusable.
Porque se fumiga desde aviones o avionetas.
They fumigate from small planes.
Uh-huh. Lo cual se esparce por todos los territorios.
And that disperses through all the territories.
So in addition to basically making the land unproductive, there's some other health concerns that come about from this type of fumigation, I would imagine.
Pues no, además de hacer improductiva la tierra,
besides making the land unproductive,
contamina las fuentes de agua,
it contaminates water.
Okay.
Acaba con el total de la biodiversidad.
It destroys biodiversity.
Uh-huh. Y viene contaminando a los seres humanos.
And it harms human beings.
En tal sentido, lo único que le queda a las comunidades,
what the community is the only thing that they're left with,
es desplazarse de sus territorios para sobrevivir.
Is to displace themselves from their territories in order to survive.
So we're talking about an agriculturally based economy that's basically being destroyed, in addition to your health being destroyed by this Plan Colombia and the support from the United States, and then no funds are offered to help with displacement, to help clean the land, or to address health issues that result from the contamination from the fumigation.
Para nosotros es claro que el tema de la coca no le favorece a nadie.
We're sure that talking about the coca or the illicit plant, actually the coca plant is used culturally by many people in Latin America, but it is also used for drugs. So they're talking about the coca plants that are used for drugs when they uh-huh. not the ones that are used legally and have been used for centuries.
Porque si alguien se perjudica con el cultivo de coca, somos realmente los colombianos.
And if anybody is harmed by the growing of coca, it's the Colombians themselves, the illegal coca.
Debido a todos los daños que este genera.
There's a lot of suffering that comes from this.
Pero creemos que para erradicarla hay que crear estrategias alternativas, mucho más efectivas.
To eradicate it, we need to have other alternative ways of doing that.
Como brindarle mayores oportunidades a los campesinos para cultivar y comercializar sus productos.
To give other opportunities to the peasants that they can have other crops, but not only that they can grow the other crops, but they have a chance to how to bring them to the market.
Right, to market them. Mm-hmm.
In our last few minutes, I want to shift our discussion just a little bit. The so-called war in drugs in the United States disproportionately impact African Americans. And I'm wondering, in your tour of the United States, in terms of talking with the African American communities, have you been able to make connections and identify common struggles?
Digamos que pues nosotros conocemos algo de la lucha que ha dado la comunidad afroamericana.
We've begun to understand the struggle of the African American community.
Y gran parte de nuestros procesos ha estado inspirado y apoyado por algunas personas de algunos afroamericanos.
And a lot of our struggles we've been inspired by the struggles of African Americans.
Pero esta gira por Norteamérica,
but this tour in the United States,
busca entre otros fortalecer esos lazos y esas relaciones.
But what we are looking for is to strengthen these relationships and these links between the two communities.
As we wrap this up, is there anything that we can help you with in terms of getting the message out? What would you like Americans to do?
Nosotros necesitamos de los estadounidenses apoyo a tres niveles.
And we need help from the United States, support from people in the United States at three levels.
El apoyo moral.
The moral support.
Es decir, conocernos entre procesos que desarrollan luchas de manera pacífica.
That they know our peaceful struggles.
Para retroalimentarnos mutuamente.
So we can reinforce and help each other out.
Necesitamos que juntos hagamos presión al gobierno de los Estados Unidos.
Secondly, we need to work together to pressure the United States.
Para que cambie su política de intervención en los países de Sudamérica.
That they change their policies of intervention in South America.
Y especialmente en Colombia, que es nuestro caso.
And particularly in Colombia, that's our situation.
Y la tercera cosa que estamos solicitando de la comunidad estadounidense.
And the third thing that we're asking from the U.S. Community.
Es el apoyo material o económico.
And it's material or economic support.
Para seguir adelante con nuestro trabajo de resistencia de manera pacífica.
So we can continue and moving ahead in our peaceful resistance.
Por la consecución de un país donde las relaciones sean más justas.
And so that we have better relationships and more just relationships between the United States and Colombia.
Partiendo de que somos seres humanos y como tales tenemos derechos.
And we as human beings have rights. And that's the basis for the solidarity that we are asking for.
Creemos que, además de lo que ha dicho la compañera,
beside what Clemencia just said,
lo fundamental es que la comunidad estadounidense,
the fundamental thing that the United States community,
se informe de la situación que se vive en el resto del mundo y en particular en Colombia.
That becomes much more aware what's happening in all parts of the world but particularly in the situation of Colombia.
Que conozcan más información de la que muestran los medios masivos y el gobierno, tanto de Colombia como de Estados Unidos.
That they know more than just what the press is saying here in the United States or what the Colombian or United States government is saying.
Porque si no estamos informados, jamás entenderemos lo que pasa.
If we're not informed, we'll never know what's happening, understand what's happening.
We've been speaking this morning with Clemencia Carabali and Victor Hugo Vidal, who are touring with the American Friends Service Committee to create awareness here in the United States about the situation here there in Colombia. For more information, I'm going to ask Marco Mejia of the American Friends Service Committee to talk about local contact.
Yeah, thanks, Cecil. You can get connected to American Friends Service Committee in different ways. Nationally, you can go to the webpage, which is www.afsc.org, and look for, /Colombia for the Colombia conflict, or just .org for the whole programs of the American Friends Service Committee. Locally here, you can call to 503-230-9427. That's the phone number in Poland, 503-230-9427, and we will talk to you about all this information and other things that we're doing locally too. And also you can write us to the American Friends Service Committee, and especially to me if you want it, at mmeja@afsc.org, and that's my personal email. And as I said before, if you want more information about Colombia, it's www.afsc.org/Colombia.
Gracias.
Well, thank you so much for being with us, and we wish you well on your journey.
Muchas gracias a ustedes por habernos dado la oportunidad de utilizar este medio para llegar a muchos americanos aquí en este país.
Thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to reach many people here in the United States.
Y gracias también a toda la audiencia que nos escuchó muy amablemente.
And thank you for all the audience that has listened to us.
Thank you.
El gusto es mío.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. This is More Talk Radio with Cecil and Celeste, 90.7 on your FM dial. It is approximately 8:38 and 45 seconds. If you are supposed to be at work at 8, you are late. And if you're supposed to be there at 8:30,
you're still late.
And if 9 o'clock, you have some time.
You better hustle.
But if you have the time, coming up at 9 at the Omo Variety Hour, guests include Grace Chang, author of Disposable Domestics, about immigrant women workers in the global economy, and Stephen Soltz, a Boston psychoanalyst who managed a website on Iraq's resistance, talks about distinguishing between resistance and democratic movement. At 10 on the food show with the Food Collective, topics include the benefits of a vegetarian diet and a program to get immigrants and refugees into farming in the Northwest. And at 11 on Democracy Now, an Iraq feminist comments on this weekend's vote on the proposed constitution and an interview with author Barbara Eyring. How do you pronounce the name? You know, Barbara.
Aaron Rick. Look, it's Monday. I'm sorry, Barbara.
We love you. We appreciate your writing.
Yes, we do. But alas, we are human and our faults are prominent.
But continuing on our program.
Yes.
You want to introduce our guests?
Certainly, certainly. We're speaking with Paul Gaum. Did I say that right?
That's right.
Okay, of the Bus Project. And for those of you who've never heard of the Bus Project, well, first we're going to tease you, because if you've been listening to cable, we had to say you've been under the proverbial rock. But it's an opportunity really for Oregonians to get organized politically. And there's a phrase, what was it that came with the Million Man March? They kind of reiterated, get on the bus.
Okay.
All right.
Get on the bus.
Get on the bus. That's right. So we've got Paul here to tell us a little bit about the bus project and then how he got involved with the bus project.
How did you get on the bus?
Yeah, how did you? What moved you?
That's actually a interesting question. My wife and I had taken some time off last year to travel. We'd been lucky enough to do that. And when we got back, I wanted to get politically active, and I'd heard of the bus, and I simply gave him a call, and about 3 hours later, I was over there helping them set up their annual party, and ever since, they've gotten me involved.
That's a fast hookup there.
That is. They're really responsive, which is wonderful, and the people are great, and it seems, although it's not necessarily geared towards young people, it has a lot of young people in it involved, mostly young people, and I loved it. I love the people. I love what they're doing. And, you know, the rest is history.
So what are they doing? What is it about the bus project that makes it a really important organization here in Oregon?
Well, from my perspective, I think it's twofold. First and foremost, it gets people involved. It's just what you mentioned. And it gets young people involved, apparently. And that's a really hard demographic. It doesn't seem like a lot of young people get involved necessarily in political groups. But you have this, and it's a wonderful outlet. We even have high school students who help out, all kinds of people. Now, that doesn't mean it's necessarily confined to young people. I mean, we want anybody who's progressive and wants to get involved politically. But we seem to be getting a really great turnout at those younger ages, which is a wonderful thing for future generations of political activism. And then second, I was going to say, we take those volunteers, and we really try to support progressive agendas. Maybe it's a candidate, maybe it's some sort of initiative, and we get the name bus because we literally have a bus. And for example, last year we would fill that bus up with volunteers, and we'd go to districts where a progressive candidate was trying to run for office, and we'd hit the pavement. We would knock on doors, talk to people, tell them about that candidate that we were supporting that day. So literally, get on the bus is exactly what it is.
Excellent. Now, you mentioned young people. What's the median age? What do they define as young people?
I wouldn't even begin to guess what the median age is, but, you know, I've been in there a couple
20s?
Days, I've seen people as young as 16.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
And that is heartening.
It is, and not just one, but a couple of them. And we have for example, we have a program with PSU where students can get, I believe, class credit by volunteering at the bus project. So we have them come in, and they end up staying long after the class is over because they love what they're doing and they're interested in the people and the politics of it. So
high school students can get credit at Portland State University, and the bus project works with Portland State.
Well, I'm not sure it's exactly high school students, but
okay,
students
but at least
at
college
PSU,
students,
I believe.
Okay.
And mm-hmm. I'm not positive on that, but that's what I believe the program is. And it's
okay.
Just a great way to get them involved. I mean, taking a class is one thing, but being involved, actually doing the politics, volunteering, talking to people is completely different. That's what engages people, and that's what ends up maybe driving them into staying into politics because they love it so much.
We're speaking with Paul Gom of the Bus Project. And we're talking about getting people involved in politics. Earlier, I think before we went on the air, you mentioned how people are really concerned about their communities and people, young people, are involved in activities. But somehow traditional politics is something that either doesn't excite them or something that people don't get involved in. My question is, how do you define politics?
Yes.
How do you get people involved in politics? I imagine Bus Project is more than just getting people to sign up to door knocks for some political candidate.
I think the number one thing we do is we show people that what they're doing is making a difference. We pick issues that are personal to them,
mm-hmm.
And that they that makes them want to get involved. And so you can't really, I don't think there's some sort of blanket definition of politics that you can throw out there and people join in. You have to show them the specific effect it has on their life and the specific change that they can make as well. So, for example, this event that we're doing an event tomorrow night on electoral dysfunction. We're talking about specific ballot issues that have to do with election reform, which is frankly a timely issue in light of some of the, you know, Tom DeLay or the debacle in 2000 in Florida. These are things that they can go to and they can see the difference that they can make here locally.
Tell us more about the event tomorrow evening.
Sure. We're calling it Electoral Dysfunction,
mm-hmm.
And it's tomorrow night, 7 p.m. at Rogue Ales Public House. And what it is we have a forum with a panel of politicians or politicos who are involved with election reform here locally. And frankly, the truth is we have a lot of election reform issues that may be on the ballot next year. I mean, it's a timely issue, and frankly, 2006 could be the year of election reform in Oregon. So with that in mind, we have these people, including Marshall Runkle, who's a former aide to Eric Stang.
Oh, yeah.
We have mm-hmm. Barbara Dudley, who's a professor over at PSU.
Mm-hmm.
And we're really going to focus on four specific election reform issues. And those are, A, caps on contributions,
mm-hmm.
B, what's called voter-owned elections,
mm-hmm.
C, open primaries, which is especially controversial, I think. And then the last one's sort of an alternative, but it's fusion voting. Mm-hmm. And those are the four specifics we're going to focus on, frankly, even though there's a world of other issues out there that we could be talking about.
Well, finance reform kind of speaks for itself, but tell us about the other three topics.
Well, the other three, the voter-owned election's an interesting one. It's here locally, and it came out of Eric Stent's office, and what it does basically is it says if you as a candidate get 1,000 people to donate $5, you will trigger some sort of financial aid from the city. And what it does is allows these candidates to get sufficient money to run a campaign without having to pander to special interest groups or big corporate money. It really gives them a even playing field, mm-hmm. so to speak.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And where does that city financial aid come from?
Well, I don't know the specifics of that, but
mm-hmm.
but frankly, if you want to find out, you should come out tomorrow night and
Everybody hear that? Okay.
How that works.
And then for the other two topics, the issues that you're going to tackle.
Well, there's open primaries,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know if your listeners know about that, but it's basically that instead of having Democratic primary and a Republican primary, you can basically vote regardless of your party affiliation for all the candidates.
That's something I've been advocating for years. I'm independent, see, and
yeah.
So therefore I'm not allowed to vote. I'm not invited to vote. And so my opinion doesn't count when I think for the primary, for the sake of getting somebody on the ballot, I'd be the person you'd want to court.
Well, and, you know, this is why this discussion is taking place, because
mm-hmm.
some people say, it's my party. You can come and join my party.
Wonderful.
But the other issue
mm-hmm.
is fusion that you mentioned.
Yes.
Yeah, this one's a new one, and frankly, I wish I knew more about it. But it's to me, seems to be a great idea. What it does is it takes care of what you would call the the wasted vote. In other words, if you, let's say, are on the Green Party, but you wanted to vote for Gore last time around, I mean, Kerry last time around, you could have him on the ballot as a Green Party candidate. So you vote for him, but the Green Party gets the credit, too, and gets that recognition. So you don't have to choose between the party and the candidate this time just because you're afraid maybe that Bush, for example, would have been voted in.
And all of these issues are new ways, as Celeste mentioned, ways in to reinvigorate the political process to bring more people and to participate in and feel ownership as part of.
I think it's twofold. I mean, it's A, to take back the elections without a doubt. I mean, we can sit here and talk about just how much money has tainted the politics. I mean, money's like power. The more you have, the more corruption there's probably going to end up being. And that's essential, is to take that money. Well, to try to take the money out of it and to try to allow candidates to feel free to go and run for office without worrying about money and worrying about are they going to be backed by corporate sponsors or corporations or high wealth individuals or whatnot.
So just basically allowing them to focus on issues, issues that really matter.
If you saw how much time the candidates spend trying to get money, and it's just a necessity, you know, not to pick on candidates, it's just the way it works, you would probably be shocked. Instead of focusing on issues, talking to people, trying to actually create change, they're out trying to raise money.
Dialing for dollars.
Yeah.
We're talking with Paul Gom of the Bus Project. They have an event tomorrow evening. Where is it again?
It's at the Rogue Ales Public House. It's at 13th or Northwest 13th and Flanders, or Northwest Flanders
14th.
And 13th. 14th.
Okay.
And what time is it?
It's at 7 p.m. We have 3 to 4 panelists, and they're going to be great. They're going to talk about all these election reform issues, and there are many that are possibly on the ballot next year. So it's not only a great educational event, but it's really a chance to meet other people who are like-minded, progressive, who like politics and who are interested about it. So even if election reform is not necessarily your cup of tea, you should come out and meet other people, because there will be an event some point that speaks to whatever it is that's close to your heart.
And Bus Project usually have monthly forums?
We do. We call it Bus Project Presents, and we try to do it once a month. And so, for example, this month is election reform. Last month we did a legislative wrap-up and talked about the legislation or legislature and where we thought it succeeded or failed or whatnot. Uh-huh. And we always manage to get people who are involved on the front line, be it politicians or lobbyists or just activists.
We have a caller online. If you have a question or comment, give us a call at 503-231-8187.
Okay.
And let's go to our caller. Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. I'm an Oregon citizen that wants to get involved, and I appreciate your encouragement. But one of the near and dear to me issues is being able to vote as an Oregon citizen. I know that when the delegates from the various states put together the federal constitution, they said that the state citizens were the people that get to vote. But in visiting with my elections office, or the elections office for Multnomah County, it turns out that they only allow U.S. citizens who are residing in Oregon to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like you to maybe talk about how if you have a plan for providing for Oregonians to eventually claim their status as a voter, and if not, could we maybe have a forum on the bus sometime?
Well, just for a little clarification, what is preventing you from basically claiming your status as an Oregonian voter?
Are you a citizen?
I went down some time ago to change party of affiliation at the registration place, and I noticed that it said, I certify under penalty of perjury that I'm a U.S. citizen. And I go, well, I'm an Oregonian. Does that work for you? And they said, well, it's the same thing. And I said, okay, thank you. I'll just cross this out and put Oregonian in here. And they said, oh, you can't do that. I said, but didn't you just say it was the same thing? And they said, well, not exactly. And I said, okay, can you help me understand the difference? And so far, they won't talk about it. They referred me to the Secretary of State. So Secretary of State referred me back to them. I've had a couple meetings with them. But as it stands, they accepted, you know, my statement that I would no longer be taking a voter pamphlet as a U.S. citizen, and that they would contact me at some point in the future if they ever had elections for Oregon office by run, you know, where candidates who are Oregon citizens were running, where Oregon citizens could vote. But at this point, Oregon citizens are not allowed to vote, and they're not allowed to even run for office.
Well, this certainly sounds like a discussion that a forum could take place. And
I think so. It needs to happen.
Okay. So Paul, you want to invite him to?
I would certainly invite you to come out tomorrow night. You know, the specifics of the election mechanics, which sounds like what you're getting at here, may not necessarily be the topic tomorrow night. But
no, it doesn't sound like that.
But, you know, you still talk to people involved with the bus and otherwise, and, you know, those are the kind of discussions that lead to future forum events. You know, we're always looking for volunteers, and those volunteers always lead, you know, come up with ideas that lead to next month's forum event. So I certainly invite you to come on down tomorrow night.
Thank you so much.
Okay, all right, thanks.
If people are interested in the bus project, how might they contact?
You know, there are two ways, really. First, they should go to the website, which is busproject.org, and then, you know, they're more than welcome to give us a call, too, at 503-233-3018.
Excellent. We have a couple of calls in a few minutes. Let's try to get to the next one. Good morning.
Yes. Hi. I mean, I think all these reforms are good, but I think the main issue, I think they're all treating symptoms rather than causes.
Mm-hmm.
And the cause of the expense of political campaigns is television more than anything else. And I think that advertising for a TV campaign, television advertising for political campaigns should be banned. And what we should have instead, the airways are public, and it should be a public service to provide information, things like debates and in-depth reporting on issues and candidates should be free.
Well, once upon a time, there was a fairness doctrine.
Well, there was also the issue that it was an adequate amount of time given to issues in the news so that the actual news or public commentary would take a longer, more in-depth look. Nowadays, it's just sound bites, so, you know, you have to end up paying for it. You know, just to kind of take your point to a different conclusion, it seems like it ought to be free to advertise.
Well, Yeah, except
then they don't have to pay for it.
Well, see, I don't think that candidates and issues are things that should be sold to people.
Mm-hmm.
Should have information. I mean, you shouldn't be selling people and ideas like they were cars or toothpaste or something. There's a difference between advertising and information.
And information.
That's a very good point. So, in other words, just make sure we have good debates.
Right, and include everybody.
All right, I like that.
Hey, thank you for your call.
Sure.
And, Paul, we just have a couple of minutes. I want you to tell us again about the bus project, how they can get involved, and
where to get on the bus. Where does the bus stop?
Where's the bus stop?
Yeah.
Like I said, first you can check us out at www.busproject.org. Give us a call at the office. We love new volunteers, 503-233-3018. And bottom line, it's a chance for you to get involved in progressive politics. Great people of all ages are welcome.
Parents, bring your kids.
Parents, can you bring your kids, bring your neighbors, bring anyone.
Bring your
you
grandparents.
Want. Exactly. you know, we love all volunteers, basically. And it's just, you will be surprised how involved, how great it is to get involved. It happened to me within a matter of months. I love what I'm doing. I love volunteering. I love the people I work with. And I feel like I'm actually starting to make a difference. So it's a great program.
Paul, thank you so much for joining us this morning, and thank you for the work in the bus project. Tomorrow evening at 13th and Gleason?
Flanders.
14th and Flanders.
14th and Flanders, Rogue's Ale House.
There we go.
Just go there, somewhere near there.
Exactly.
Start at 14th and Flanders, and you'll find the Rogue Brewery and Public House there. And be there tomorrow.
And thank you so much for listening. And we want to for you to stay tuned for the upcoming program. Next week, we'll talk about immigrants' rights with Eric Ward. Thank you for listening. And we'll see you next week.
Yes, right. We'll hear you next week, too.
Okay.
All righty.